Back together, you and I, on Tuesday, June 29th, 2021, on Connecticut Today. We started off the 4 o'clock hour with a return call from Ben Proto, recently elected the state Republican Party chair. Top of the 5 o'clock hour, Tony Wong, Republican of Fairfield, from the state Senate, talking about more little nuggets that we're finding out in the marijuana bill. And I also had some thoughts as to the usual chicanery going on with the congressional Democrats, in particular House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and what she is saying about an infrastructure bill. So, time to welcome a guy that I've known for years, and for full disclosure, I worked on a campaign with him, wow, it's 11 years ago already, but had a great time doing that, but more importantly than the fact that he actually had to share an office with me at one time, he is now the newly elected chairman of the Connecticut State Republican Party, Ben Proto. Ben, how are you, my friend? How you doing?
I'm doing well, Paul. How are things over at WICC? Staying cool?
Well, we're trying, Ben. We're trying. You know, the heat gets this high. It's tough. But thank you, Ben. Appreciate the time for coming on. Ben, you've been described as, I'm loving this, and you, knowing you, you're probably smiling about it. A lot of people are calling you a longtime Republican operative, and even Colin McEnroe says he refers to you in a column today as a good guy. So there you go. You seem to have the imprimatur, Ben. I would imagine you have to be happy with the win and taking all these accolades in stride.
I'm very excited about having been selected by the committee to represent the Republican Party in Connecticut and to work with our great town chairs and town committees across the state and our elected officials. And Colin's words were quite kind, and I don't know that there's many who write better than Colin. So as he said, though, however, he may have been more harm than good by telling everybody that I was a nice guy. So I'm looking forward to the next couple of years and helping move our Republican Party forward in the state of Connecticut.
And, you know, Ben, you can be aggressive. You can battle like the teams battle on Sunday afternoon and looking to really win and knock each other around for an hour. But before the match and after the match, you can be gentlemanly or ladylike to each other. You can shake hands before and after. But there's really nothing wrong with being a nice guy, Ben. You can be firm, but I think some of that nicety grace of politics has escaped us in the past several years.
I think you're right about that. Politics has become far more personal in nature. We've become far more divided among, you know, just within families. We've seen it. And, you know, if I can help, you know, return some civility to the conversation, that's great. But at the end of the day, my job is to go out and help Republicans win elections and to, quite frankly, point out the, you know, the, in my opinion and many people's opinion, the utter failure of the Democrats over pretty much the last 50 years when they've managed this state to take us from what was, we were once the greatest state in the country to now we are considered to be the state people want to get out of. And don't want to come to. So, and that's all the Democrats feed over the last 50 years.
So we may have Republican voters, Ben, listening to us right now, or right-leaning centrists or unaffiliated, saying, okay, Ben, nice idea. I'm all for that. How do you do that? What are your plans to get that rolling?
Well, again, politics is a personal activity, and it requires talking to voters, but more importantly for me and what I've talked about is it really means we have to listen to voters more than we have in the past and really begin to understand their issues and their concerns and to develop responses to those issues and concerns using our principles and values to address those concerns. All too often, I think we've spent too much time doing what I call putting the green eye shade on and trying to explain multi-billion-dollar deficits, or $100 billion pension liabilities, or $500 million employee raises, and that's just numbers that go over pretty much everybody's head, and it doesn't really address the concerns of, you know, the average trying to make a living, raise their family, and live their life, and try to succeed as best they can. So I think it's about communicating and listening.
And part of it, Ben, also, no matter what party someone is in or what their political affiliation is, money always does play a part of it. And Lord knows this state is awash with well-heeled and deep-pocketed Democrats. The GOP party chair for years has always had to battle a lack of funds or a difficulty in raising funds. How do you plan to tackle that, Ben?
Again, I think what we've seen over, you know, just the last 6 months, the Connecticut Republican Party over the last 6 months has probably brought in more money than it has in any other off-year six-month period. And we're seeing, you know, more and more money come in. We're, you know, receiving, but Paul, when I get contributions of $1, $5, $6, and people saying, please help, please change this state, those are people who are going to be voting for us regardless of what letter comes after their name. And I've been seeing just in the last week, you know, I see the contributions that come in every day, and we're getting more and more small donors, people saying, please help us, please do something to change this state. So I think the money issue is always an issue, and not only, you know, for any political party, particularly in Connecticut, you know, raising money is never an easy task. It's a job that the chairman has to take on, and I've readily accepted to do that, and I will be doing that. But right now, I think it's even more important to know how we're going to spend that money and how we're going to take the funds that these folks are giving us to make sure that they know that their money is going towards electing Republicans. And they all understand we have overhead like any other business. But at the end of the day, the more money that we can put into developing candidate information, developing data, developing the ability to communicate, the better off we're going to be.
Attorney Brent Porto is the guest. He is the recently elected new chair of the Connecticut Republican Party. Ben, I know there's been discussion about this on a national scale, on a statewide, local scale here in Connecticut for years. How much time should a Republican Party of any level put into trying to peel away votes or change votes in the deep blue urban city areas? There is a thought that say, hey, if we can spend time there, any vote we can get helps. There's also been a thought, Ben, as you know, over the years, hey, let's just concentrate on the suburbs because the cities are lost causes. What are your thoughts on that issue?
I don't believe the cities are lost causes. I believe the people in the state of Connecticut, whether they're living in our urban centers or our suburban areas or our more rural areas, I believe they agree more closely with the Republican values and principles than they do with the Democratic values and principles. These are people who are, like you and I, Paul, people are concerned about their families. They're concerned about their children. They're concerned about their jobs, their ability to keep a job or find a job. They're concerned about their ability to pay their taxes and pay their bills. Connecticut is one of the least affordable states in the country. And whether you live in downtown Bridgeport or you live in Litchfield or in Hartford or in Pomfret, those are concerns everybody has. And those are the concerns that we're going to address and how to make Connecticut a more affordable place to live, a better place to raise your family, and a place where you want to stay when you retire so you don't have to worry about getting on an airplane to go visit your grandchildren someplace. Mm-hmm. And those are the things that we're going to talk about. Because at the end of the day, I believe that the electorate that you and I dealt with 10 years ago, that you and I dealt with 20 years ago or 30 years ago, hasn't changed much in their political philosophy. I believe it's the parties that have moved further away from the electorate, and it's time for us to get back and talk to that electorate and talk to our voters and understand those voters' concerns and address those concerns. All too often, look, we've seen the Democrats in Hartford this past year. I think they've done more damage in the last 6 months of this year than they have done in the last 10 years of control of the state government. We're seeing more and more people saying, hey, wait a minute, this is not what I was thinking you were going to do when you talked about all these warm, fuzzy liberal ideas you had. Mm-hmm. I didn't think you were going to be inserting yourself between me and my children and telling me how to parent my children. I didn't think you were going to be telling me how and when I could pray to my God. I didn't think you were going to be telling me what doctor I could go to or what I could communicate with my doctor or who could communicate with my doctor. These are all things that the Democrats are doing. They're inserting themselves, and by that I mean the government, more and more into people's lives and taking more and more of our freedoms away and dictating more and more as to what we can do and can't do. And I think people are getting very tired of that, which is why we're seeing those $1 and $5 and $6 contributions from people saying, please change this. So that's what we're going to be talking about.
And also, Ben, the emphasis has to be
supported
with that.
Democrats.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm sorry, you're breaking up a little bit. That's why, okay. Ben, I think that a lot of people need to be reintroduced to the fact, Ben, that the brakes can be put on to a large extent by chipping away at margins in the state legislature. Everybody gets tied into, Ben, or tied up with who's the governor. Never mind that. Get seats back in the state Senate, and that's how you put a break. You put the brakes on a lot of this.
I agree with you. Look, whoever the governor is always an important player in any state. And so in no way am I going to minimize the role the governor plays in the state of Connecticut. But the legislature in Connecticut has a great deal of power and influence, and I absolutely agree with you that, you know, if we can build over the next couple of cycles into a majority in the state Senate, and I think we can, and we can pick up a number of seats in the state House, it will be less concerning as to who the governor is, because at the end of the day, it's the legislature that ultimately makes the laws. The governor can propose, but the legislature is the ones who are making the laws. And I believe that we have the ability to add seats in the Senate and the House over the next couple of cycles.
Ben Proto, the newly elected head of the state Republican Party here in Connecticut. Ben, thank you for the time. We appreciate it. You have the number, so don't be a stranger, and we'll talk down the road. Thanks.
Absolutely, Paul. Take care. Stay cool.
Appreciate it. Ben Proto there, Stratford attorney and the new Republican Party chairman of the state. So we wish him all good luck. You probably heard in our national news coverage, over the past 2 or 3 days, there were all these negotiations about an infrastructure bill. The president wants an infrastructure bill. They want to get the economy going after COVID, whatever. So there were about 2 or 3 weeks of talks. And late last week, they finally came to an agreement. And the president had gathered with the bipartisan Senate members. There were like 10 or 15 of them, whatever. And they came to an agreement, and the agreed number for infrastructure was, I don't know, something like 900 and whatever billion dollars. And everybody seemed to be hunky-dory about it. And, you know, everybody was saying, hey, you know, this is pretty cool, and look at that. There's a bipartisan agreement here, and this is how things should work and all that. And then the games began. And if you remember, the president said last week something to the effect of, well, we've got this bipartisan deal, but he alluded. Now, this is how much of a clown show we have going in D.C. now. And I know you're going to say, but Trump, Trump, Trump. Okay, this was supposed to be better than Trump, right? This was supposed to be, oh, we're going to go back to normalcy. Everything's going to be hunky-freaking-dory. Okay, so they come to this agreement. Finally, look at this. This is the bipartisanship that Joe Biden used to shepherd in the Senate. Okay, I said to myself, good, good, let's do things. Now, I said to myself, wow, this is really going to be a standalone bill. Well, you thought that. And then Biden alluded to, the president alluded to, saying, well, but it's only going to happen if the other part of the budget bill passes. To which the Republican said, hey, wait a minute, that's not how we understood this. So then over the weekend, it turned into a real cluster over the weekend. And the White House had to come out and say, and the president had to come out and say, no, 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 I didn't mean to link it to the budget bill. So we go from it was linked to the budget bill to it wasn't linked to the budget bill. And now guess what? Cruella comes out today, Nancy Pelosi, and says, oh, it's going to be linked to the budget bill. Speaker Nancy Pelosi on Tuesday amplified her plans to link a bipartisan infrastructure agreement to a second package of Democratic economic priorities. In a closed-door meeting with her caucus at the Capitol, Pelosi said her initial strategy to withhold a House infrastructure vote until the Senate passes a larger partisan families plan remains unchanged. So understand what's going on here, folks. This is like a fire drill. You have Biden mumbling something. You have Chuck Schumer mumbling something else. And you have Nancy Pelosi doing a third thing. And the Republicans are here going, okay, could we just do infrastructure? See, here's what you have to understand, folks. Nancy Pelosi doesn't want a deal. Nancy Pelosi doesn't want an infrastructure deal. The last thing the Democrats want at this moment is to work side by side with Republicans on this, because they don't want to take the specter away from January 6th and from Trump. And the last thing Nancy Pelosi wants is a group of Democrats or Republicans getting together and agreeing on something that could be passed in a standalone bill. The Democrats are getting hammered on the defund the police thing, and it's showing in the polls. And you know what else is showing in the polls now? I have a new poll coming, from a new poll that came out. I'll share that for you in a couple of minutes. They're getting hammered on the border still. So it is not in Nancy Pelosi's political best interest to agree with Republicans on anything. Why does anybody think she wants an agreement? Come on. So, folks, this is a Keystone Cops. And if you don't believe me, if you think, well, Paul, you're just being a partisan Republican. Okay, don't believe a thing I just told you. Look it up. First it wasn't linked to the budget bill. Then it was. Then it wasn't. And now it is again. Representative John Yarmuth, Democrat, Kentucky. What the speaker has said, and I totally agree with her, is that we're not going to vote on one until the Senate sends us both. That's not changed. Okay, then you know what the Republicans should do? They should walk away. Honestly, if I was Mitch McConnell, and I think he's going to do this, they're going to walk away. He's going to say, I got your infrastructure right here. Seriously. Because the Democrats in Washington don't want a gentility of politics to return. They need a fight worse than the Republicans do. Why can't you just pass an infrastructure bill? Why? Why can't you just pass an infrastructure bill? Well, we know why, because that would show a signing of a bill with Joe Biden there, with Democrats standing next to Republicans, and the far lefty nutcases in the Democratic Party. That's the last thing they want. They don't want to see folks from the right and the left side of the aisle shaking hands and smiling and saying, look what we did. That's the last thing the Rashida Tlaib, the AOC crowd, the Ayanna Pressley crowd, they don't want that. That's the last thing they want. And don't think they ain't telling Pelosi that either. Are you excited? Man, only two more days. This coming Thursday, Marijuana Freedom Day in Connecticut. Are you getting all tingly about this one? Well, earlier in the show, we talked about an aspect of this bill that I've kind of been looking for answers on for the last couple of weeks. These designated, I may be butchering the actual language here, but designated use areas or designated consumption areas. If you're in a municipality of 50,000 or more, where are those? Where are they going to be? Do they have to be set up? Well, maybe somebody who can add to this, our buddy, our pal, Republican State Senator Tony Wong joins us from Fairfield. Tony, hi, it's Paul. How are you today, sir?
I am great, Paul. Thanks for having me. And unfortunately, Paul,
yeah,
I can't add to it because this is all very much new to me.
Jesus.
Beyond the fact that you know, now if we gave marijuana to pets, it's a felony.
Yeah.
What's ironic is this, that the proponent of the bill didn't even know what
he didn't know
in
was
there.
In there.
And can you imagine if he didn't know?
Oh.
There were no Republicans invited to this marijuana party, and this was passed. We went through three different iterations. It seems like, you know, it's like a Marx Brother routine. But unfortunately, it is the people that are going to live with these unintended consequences. And I have to tell you, Paul, it's been 3 weeks almost since the end of legislative session and almost 2 weeks since we went in to pass the marijuana bill three times and pass a 937-page budget implementer that had a plethora of rats in there that we're now finding out. Paul, for the last 2 weeks, I have been trying to explain to people what bills has been passed by the Democratic-controlled arrogance in the House, the Senate, and the governor's office in affecting people's lives. People are looking at me and saying, I just heard this happen.
Right. Yeah. Oh, geez. How could this happen, Tony? And you have to explain. Yes, yes. It is. It's mind-numbing, Tony. And yeah, whether it's in the implementer or whether it's in this marijuana bill. And I talked earlier today, one of your main areas is involved here, Fairfield, Tony. One of these areas, the 19 municipalities that... Well, if they choose to regulate marijuana, then you have to set up a designated consumption area. What is that? I mean, is...
Well, it's a combination of so many of the things that we have railed against this legislative system. It shouldn't be Democrat, Republican. It should be representing the communities we serve. So the idea that you are now required by the state to set up a marijuana smoking area if your town chooses not to allow the dispensing or the selling of that. And if you're over 50,000, you need to now make physical space accommodations. Now, I actually just had an incident where a business owner had a customer complain that there were some people smoking outside.
Okay.
They were obviously smoking pot.
Yeah.
And was there anything you could do about it? And literally, you couldn't do anything about it. Because the reality, under the law, as I understand it, anywhere that you can smoke a cigarette, as of July 1st, you can now smoke pot.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, Tony, buried in the bill, you probably saw this, October 1, even that changes to a wider halo. So, okay, they're trying to get some uniformity there, the pot smoking, the marijuana smoking. But again, the overall change, Tony, in the smoking regulations, I read that and I said, well, wait a minute. Where did that come from? That didn't even have any open debate, did it? Or did I miss something?
No, there was no open debate. And isn't that ironic that we're now allowed to smoke pot in most places while we're looking to ban cigarette smoking and vaping? Yeah. It seems to be consistently inconsistent. But the problem additionally is the public safety component, right?
Yeah.
One of the area of debate in the House that was really compelling for me, Paul, was a law enforcement state representative said, if I see 19-year-olds sitting in a car smoking pot and I can smell it, and I approach them with probable cause, I can't search the car without their permission, and I can't take that product away, even though if it's legal, they're still 19 and shouldn't possess it because it's the age limit of 21. It seems the police reform bill that was in place now says law enforcement cannot search a vehicle without the permission of the owner. It's plethora of bills that have been passed that are going to be imposed on people's lives that most people don't know about. And that is the arrogance of one-party rule. And it's very frustrating. I don't care. Even if you're a Democrat or a unaffiliated, the fact is we have a government that says We know what's better for you, and we're going to tell you what to do.
And, Tony, there were so many things that were sold to people here. And, Tony, I can't tell you the number of friends I have and associates who may be critical of me, and they say, well, you know, look at all this tax money that's coming in into the general fund. And then I come on the show a couple of weeks ago, and I read, and it was in the Hartford Courant. You probably saw it. Kudos to the Courant for Tony, publishing the graphic representation that came from the Office of Legislative Analysis that illustrates that the general fund, which is supposed to keep our operating expenses in order and keep our taxes down, you only see the 100% figure, Tony, for the general fund for 1 year. For 1 year. And then in 2 years, the general fund gets nada. And then I tell people this, Tony, and they go, I get a collective, huh? And I said, well, here it is. If you don't believe me, read it. And it just, Tony, you're right. It goes beyond Republican or Democrat. It's sad. It's sad that we are constantly lied to on stuff like this. What about all this talk, Tony, about, oh, this will add so much revenue to the general fund? Apparently not. Apparently not.
No, and we've had nearly $2 billion out of American Rescue Fund that will fall off a cliff in 2 years. And we've made no structural changes to government. And we just came out with the recent data that Connecticut is 49th in business growth. And where are we going to generate the needs, the critical needs? So it's not just from a standpoint of taxation and budgeting. It's about critical social services, rightfully and deservedly needed revenue to fulfill these social obligations. They're going to be the first to go. When we went through the budget crisis, those nonprofits, those critical service agencies are the first to weather the punishment,
yeah,
the cutbacks. Meanwhile, even during the worst of the budget crisis, the state employees, as hardworking as they are, have continued to get guaranteed salary increases. It's an unfairness that is palpable, and the more I'm bringing it up, the more I feel like I'm getting hotter than the temperature outside.
Don't do that, Tony, please. Republican State Senate member Tony Wong, Fairfield. Tony, good to hear from you. Stay cool, calm down, and don't give cannabis to any pets, Tony, or you'll be in trouble. Thanks. We appreciate the time.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Paul.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate it.